I'm glad I'm not the only one that forgets. Actually, I thought today, as I was driving down here, I thought, you know, I should have emailed Don a few days ago and made sure he was still expecting me to be here. Because I thought, generally when I'm coming, somebody always emails me a few days ahead and says, you're still planning on being here, right? I got thinking, I never did get that email. I'm wondering if he's remembered, and sure enough. But that works out fine, probably for everybody involved. That way Don's got his lesson prepared for next week and doesn't have to do that extra work. And we're all set up and ready to go. Just to give you a little background about myself. I was serving as an elder at New York Avenue starting in 1996. And actually put in, we did not have elders up to that point. We've been for a little while without elders. And they selected new elders, and I was one of the ones they selected to be an elder. And so there was three of us serving at that time in 1997 when Siegelville Church of Christ in Siegelville, Texas approached us and said, we would like for you guys to consider taking on the oversight of Chamala Mission. They had been doing it for the last 7 years prior. And we said, well, let us think about it and give some prayer to it, because we had some meetings with them and talked to them about what was involved. So after a lot of prayer and discussion, we'd agreed to do so. And one of the things we decided, if we did take on the work, we wanted truly to be overseers of the work. And so one of the things we agreed and that we each would do would be making trips over there periodically to see the work, to check on the work, so we could know the work and really know how to truly oversee it. And so Jerry Herring went in 1998, the first year we had the work. We took it over in January of 99, Jim Gregg and myself went over together. And I fell in love with the work the first time I went. I came home from that trip and I told Cindy, I said, the next time I go, you need to go with me. And so our chance came up again in 2001. We traveled back over there in 2001. And like I thought, she fell in love with it also. One of the reasons I fell in love with it, not only this, just because of all the good works that go on there, I fell in love with the people and their desire to know about Christ. I had the opportunity to go out and do some house to house, go up to somebody's house and go, Hody, which is in Swahili, he's asking permission to come onto their property, you know, approach their house. And they would go, Karibu, which means you're welcome. And when you'd get up there and start talking to them, asking them about if they would like to study the Bible, you know, every time the answer would be Ndio, which means yes. And so I thought, boy, this is so different from what I've experienced at home. And you know, not everybody believes, not everybody is willing to become a Christian, but they were willing to sit down and study and listen and ask good questions. And, you know, what I found, so much more so there, they are willing to take the Bible at what it says and not want to argue, you know, well, how about this, how about that. If the Bible says it, they're willing to believe it. And so when you can take them to the Scriptures and show them what the Bible says, it's so much easier for them to say, yeah, that's right. We just recently started a radio program about 2 years ago. And that's one of the first comments we got after the first broadcast was, y'all guys teach straight from the Bible. You're different. We can tell a difference in what y'all preach and all these other radio, you know, church programs that are on. We were flooded with phone calls. The guys that did the program started, they were calling and said, we need help. We got more calls than we can answer and more follow-ups to do than we can get to. So we had to kind of get our forces together and really start working. And this resulted in hundreds, if not thousands, of baptisms already just from the radio working itself. Well, I'm not going to talk all night about this without getting to my presentation, so I better get going. So, currently, we have three missionaries working with the work. And you see in your upper left, that's Cheryl Bodie. Cheryl is an RN from Oklahoma City. She's starting her fifth year working with the mission, and she works strictly with the hospital for the most part. She doesn't necessarily work in the wards every day. She works more as an advisor, helping them with both the business side of the hospital and the medical side of the hospital. You know, there's lots of things she's able to teach them that they can do better medically. Along with it, we have other groups coming from the States periodically to work there. But also she's helped procure a lot of good equipment, more funds for the hospital. And there's been lots of improvements made there over the last few years since she's been there. Also, she does mobile clinics, about 4, 5, 6 a month, mobile clinics, out into the villages where people are too far away to get to the hospital. And we'll talk a little bit more about that after we get into the presentation. Also, sorry, I got one of them frogs too. Richard and Carol Rogers on the upper right, they're our newest missionaries. Richard and Carol joined the work last year in October. They came from the Bear Valley program out of Colorado. They'd went through their missionary program, and they chose Shimala Mission as their place to do their internship. I've been talking to Richard. He hasn't made that 100% commitment yet that they're going to continue on full time, but he's talking about what they're going to do next year, so I think he's planning on coming back and staying. They're coming home in November to be home for the holidays, but I take it they're going back in January to work full time there. And of course, Cindy and I have been working full time with the work since January of 2007. Of course, I've been making trips over there off and on before that. But in 2006, the administrator that was working there at the mission was Darren Stapleton. He announced that he wanted to come home to further his education and to really get into the pulpit work here in the States. And Heath Stapleton called me. At that time, Heath was doing what I do today. And he said, "Bill, we're going to find another administrator to work the mission." So I went home that night. I asked Cindy, I said, "You ready?" And so after a lot of discussion and prayer amongst the two of us and with the elders there at New York Avenue, we made the decision to move over. And we spent the last part of 2006 preparing to go and moved over there in January of 2007. And we've been working full-time with the work since then. We've spent 5 years there full-time. And today we're back and forth here more than we're there, but we've already been there 3 months this year, so almost been half the time this year already over there. Probably will not be going back unless there's a need for us to, because I'm behind on my work on this side. We're responsible for raising funds and doing all the getting things together for containers and doing all that kind of stuff, shipping containers, and we're behind in all that work now since we've been over there 3 months this year. We will be. Like I said, we go back and forth, and we go over and still help out when we can. If you do not know where Tanzania is in East Africa. It's a pretty good flight over there. The way we've been flying lately, we left on Saturday morning out of Dallas. We got to the mission on Tuesday afternoon. So it takes a while to get there. Now, there are quicker ways. We do an overnight in Dubai, and that adds basically a day to it. But if you don't know, we fly into Dar es Salaam, which has been the acting capital for a long time of Tanzania. They're actually in the process of moving everything to Dodoma. The parliament has been meeting there for several years, but everything else was still in Dar. If you wanted to go work with the Ministry of Health, the Ministry of Education, the Ministry of Home Affairs, all the different things that we have to deal with as a mission, it was in Dar es Salaam. But now they are in the process of moving it to Dodoma, and some of the, like the Ministry of Health has already moved, I know. Problem is, Dodoma doesn't have an airport, which means we have to drive to Dodoma from the mission. And the mission is located over here. And it was 14 hours from Dar es Salaam to the mission by car. But we've been able to fly. The airport opened out on the west side of Mbeya, and we've been able to fly, and that flight's only about an hour and 15 minutes. But there's no flights to Dodoma, so I don't know what we're going to do. I guess we're going to be doing lots of long trips back and forth to Dodoma again. I don't know how well you can see this out there. Where it says Chamala Mission, that is the current mission site. We have about 394 acres there. And then you see up on top where you can see where it's all mountainous, all the mountain ridges there. This is a Google Earth picture, by the way. If any of you are on the internet, you can get on Google Earth. You can actually put in Chamala, Tanzania. And you can move around. Where you see what red dot is where it says Chamala. That's where it'll center on. If you move just a little bit over to the south and to the east, and you'll see the mission. You can see, when you zoom in, I'll show you this next picture here. You can see the hospital and all the buildings. And you also can tell it because we got more trees there than any place else. Over here on the, what would be the west side, that's the Chamala River running through there. It borders our property all the way down. It comes down off the mountains. And so it runs year round. It's a spring-fed river. And so that's one of our water sources for the mission. If you've been reading the articles and stuff for years, I'm sure you read about the rainy season, the river getting high and washing out our intake and having to go down there and make a new intake. Because it's always been a challenge to keep that active because the level in the dry season to the wet season is very different. We have a canal that runs all the way through the mission that we divert water into. And it's actually the water for the hospital. We've got a filtration, water purification plant now built. And the hospital uses about 8,000 gallons of water a day. So we never were able to put it on our well because there's more demand than our well could handle. But now we have this purification system. And so we now have clean water for our hospital. As you see over here, on this side is all our schools, primary school, secondary school. Then back over here is a shop, teacher housing for the teachers to teach. You can't see much of the hospital staff housing because of the trees, but there's houses all down through there. And that's where the old original hotel was. I'll talk a little bit more about that here in a minute. And you see CBI, and in between CBI and the hospital is a building there, and that's the church building. And on Sunday mornings, there's been around 240 to 250 people there on Sunday mornings lately. Building is full. So I talked to the elders there this last trip. I said, you guys are going to start thinking about building a bigger building. They keep growing, which is a great thing that's going on. They're really getting large, and so it's really exciting. Tanzania now has about 56 million people. It's about twice the size and area as the state of California. Just kind of give you an idea how large Tanzania is. So it's a lot of people. And most of those people are in the major cities. Dar es Salaam is one of the fastest growing cities in the world right now. It's about 5 to 6 million people. And even in Baya, that city that's to the west of us, about 50 miles, they're saying it's over 1 million people now. So quickly growing. Now, so much of the country is bush country, and you wouldn't think there'd be anybody out there. You can take off on a little dirt road, just driving through the bush, and all of a sudden you come around the corner and here's a village. After you've been driving for miles without seeing anything. And it's kind of that way all over. So there's lots of villages, and a lot of them we still haven't got to. It amazes me through the years when I've been out traveling, doing different things, and get into areas, and I say, have we ever been to this village and worked it? No, we haven't ever made it to this one yet. So, I mean, there's still so many places that still need to be worked. It's just unbelievable. That's one of the advantages of the radio program. It's reaching some of those places we hadn't got to before. And so we're getting calls there. So now we're going and trying to establish churches there. But we need to cover more area. I'll tell you a little story about this picture here. Did any of y'all take the Christian Chronicle? There was an article in the Christian Chronicle about 3 months ago, maybe four now, it's 3 or 4 months ago. Eric at Christian Chronicle called me, and he had read one of my newsletters. I'd written an article in the newsletter about this particular event. This is a funeral, and the story behind that funeral is our guys had been down in the Tukuyu area doing some campaigning, going house to house. And they ran across an old man that had went to our preacher's training school. When you saw that slide while I showed the old mission site, there was a preacher's training school up there in the 50s and 60s. And this man had went through that school and graduated there. But later, he fell away and quit going to the church. And our guys talked to him, and after they talked to him, he repented and said, yes, I need to get back to the church. Well, about 2 weeks later, our guys were going back down there to do a follow-up on the work they had done 2 weeks before. And that particular Sunday morning, that old man had gotten up and told his family, we're all going to go to church today. He said, I'm back in the church. Y'all need to get in the church. The ones of you that haven't been baptized need to be baptized. So he heads off to church. And our guys get there, and they preach that morning. And several people let it be known they want to be baptized for remission their sins. And so as usual, you know, if you're in Tanzania, they don't have a baptistry in the building. You ought to be baptized, you go to where the nearest water is that's deep enough that you can baptize somebody. And as usual, they ask our guys if we could haul the people down there in the car. So they loaded up the car full of people. And this old man wanted to go with them. And so he gets in the car, and they're driving down there, and he started feeling ill. And our guy stopped, tried to get some medical help for him. He ended up passing away. And this is a picture of his funeral. When you have a funeral there, in their culture, the village comes to the funeral. They come out to support the family, to help them financially in whatever way they can, because they're very poor. The average person there makes like $2 to $3 a day. So they try to help each other, and it's just part of their custom. So what our guys do, and what I think we probably should do more here in the States, we used to do it more, I don't see it much anymore. When there was a funeral, we took an opportunity to share the gospel with everybody that's there. Because you got everybody there, and it's a great opportunity. This man has died. Nobody knows what holds for tomorrow. And so they preach a real good sermon, you know, while they got everybody there. Well, at this particular funeral, and I don't have the number in front of me, and I've kind of forgotten that. It's either like 6 or 7 or 8, somewhere in there, in that number. People came forward wanting to be baptized from this funeral. And after Eric read that at the Christian Chronicles, he said, can I put this in the Christian Chronicles? So some of you might have read that. The work began in 1963. Mission work started up on our mountain in 1955. 1962, Tanganyika was getting their independence from the British colonies. And they came through and announced to our missionaries that if you want to stay here, you will have to be doing something that benefits our country. We're making all faiths, if they want to be in our country doing mission work, they're going to have to be doing something that serves our country and helps improve it. Andrew Conley had heard about this. He'd been working down in what's now Malawi. It was Nazi land back then. And he proposed the idea of starting a hospital. And the guys agreed to that. They said, yeah, it would be great. So there were 3 pieces of land that originally had been owned by the Germans in the 1800s and was lost during World War I to the British colonies. And some Scottish guys ended up with the property these Germans owned. There was 325 acres up on top of the mountain. Originally, there was 590 acres where the hospital is now, and there was 400 acres out on the plains north of us. So these guys wound up with all that property, and they had sold the 400 acres out on the plains and the 325 to the first missionaries, and they still had the 590 acres. There was a hotel on that property that the Germans had built back in the early 1900s. And a lot of those, like that water ditch, there was a hotel there. There was rooms down there people could rent. Our property is located in what's known as the Great North Highway. You could drive from Cape Town to Cairo all the way across the continent of Africa. And our road that goes in front of the mission was part of that highway. So it was a great place for a hotel. When the railroads was built, it runs across from there. So it was a great stop for people to stop and stay. So this is the property we bought. And Andrew started building the property, the hospital in 1963. He shipped over this little white building you see up there in the upper part. And Dr. Dr. Jerry Mays and his wife came over, and they started seeing patients out of this little white building. And at the same time, Andrew got the construction started. In 1965, the original hospital opened up. It didn't look quite like this, but it was the part you see is actually part of the original hospital here. It was a 50-bed hospital that opened up in 65. Today, the hospital is expanded greatly. We're now a 132-bed hospital. We deliver over 3,000 babies a year. We're seeing 60,000 patients a year at the hospital. And we have an HIV program there as part of the government. We work with Walter Reed out of the United States on this. They're over there. They have a clinic in Baya that they run, and we're part of their program on this part. And they actually help us financially on the hospital for this. But we have about 1,500 to 1,600 people a month that are enrolled in this program, where they come and are tested, get their medications. You know, one thing about HIV, if you get on the program early, get tested early, and you stay on your meds, you can live a long time, a long life. You know, people in the States here are doing that, living basically normal lives by staying on the medication. And it's the same over there. The medications we get come from the United States. It's part of the PEPFAR program that President Bush started back when he was in president. And that program is, I just saw some research that was on TV the other day talking about how that has reduced the number of people that are dying in Africa. And we're one of the countries that are part of that. So anyway, we have 1,500 to 1,600 every month coming to that. We also have around 108 to 115 employees full-time at the hospital. And by the way, on the whole mission, we have about 250 full-time employees. It's a big work. Most people have no idea how large the work is. Between the hospital, the primary school, the secondary school, the state, which is the staff that keeps everything running, the mechanics, the carpenters, the plumbers, electricians, the guards, everything that we have that keeps all this working. So between all that together, and I'm leaving out the CBI teachers, men that teach down at the Bible school and do all that work. Between all that together, we have close to 250 people. But back to the hospital, we have do about 500 vaccines for children each month. And we do about 800 well exams for children each month. And here's the good number. Every part of Chamala Mission is focused on sharing the gospel. And that's no different at the hospital. We have a man down there who was one of our longtime teachers at CBI, one of our longtime evangelists. He decided about 4 years ago he would join the hospital staff. And actually, while I was there in January, he asked me if he could retire from teaching at CBI, where he could even focus more at the hospital and starting new congregations. So we had 64 baptisms at the hospital alone last year. Now that's not, we got a lot of other places we're going to talk about as we go through here, but that's just the hospital. There's been new congregations started out of the work at the hospital. People have come there. Joshua has studied with them. He's baptized them. They've gone home to a village where there was no church. They come back and talk to Joshua and said, I don't have a church. Joshua's gone with them back to their village, going house to house, got a church established, and now that church has already had to move into a bigger building as it continues to grow. So that just kind of gives you an idea of what's going on at the hospital, evangelistic-wise. Cheryl does mobile clinics. Like I said, she does 5-6 a month. She generally sees the average of 50 to 60 patients at each one of these clinics. But she doesn't go out there and just do medical. Frank Wankambula, which you'll see his picture later, who leads our correspondence courses, goes with Cheryl. He sits up a table out there, and he talks to the patients and their families while they're being seen, waiting in line. get them to sign up, start taking correspondence courses. And we got a lot of baptisms each year just out of this work itself. I think we had like 26 baptisms last year just out of the mobile clinics alone. We opened this up while I was over there in January and February. It's our new OB ward. I had a hospital in Tennessee call me up last year, said, "Well, we're getting new beds. Would you be interested in some of our old beds?" So I flew to Tennessee and rented a big truck and hauled back a truckload of new electric hospital, or not, new used electric hospital beds. We shipped all the ones that worked well. I've still got quite a few in my warehouse that we're refurbishing, and we're going to send those on this next container. We was there when we opened up, and it's always a big deal when you open up something to the hospital. The government comes and sees it. And the district medical officer, one of the political guys, he comes over to me and said, "Can you get me some of these for our government hospital?" I said, "No, I don't think so." But he was jealous because we had these beds and they don't have them. The next phase of the work that started at the mission was Chamala Bible Institute, which actually in the beginning was called Chamala School of Preaching. And this began in 1987 when Brother Bob Stapleton was over there as a missionary. And Bob, by this time, the mission on the mountain had been gone for a while. The preacher school up there, preacher's training school was gone. There was one in Russia, and there were some Bible schools in Darv. They wasn't really truly preacher's training schools. And Bob saw the need to have a preacher's training school back at Chamala. So he began Chamala School of Preaching. In 2004, I was approached by Bear Valley was interested in having a preacher's training school in their program in our region. After several meetings, including a trip with several of us from New York Avenue, Chamala Mission, and Bear Valley, making a trip over there in November 2004, it was agreed that we would join forces with them at our preacher's training school, and it became Chamala Bible Institute. This school has now graduated over 400 men to be gospel preachers. This is our current class that we have for 2017. So you can kind of see how large a class we have that we're training to be preachers. Of course, there's a few. Some of these are teachers, actually, and a few of us missionaries are in there, and included in a couple of guests that were there visiting the mission. But we have 30 men right now being trained to be preachers. And these guys, I just got a report this last week. We have a midterm break during May and June. And we have that break so these guys can go home and work in their fields, and because that's harvest time over there. And they go over there, and that way they can be home with their families and help their families harvest. These guys didn't just do that while they were home. They spent a lot of time out going house to house, working with churches. And one guy even started a new congregation while he was home, baptized 30 people in one village, as one man did, and started a new congregation. We ended up with a total of 162 baptisms out of the guys while they were home on school break, that 2 months. And our guys at the mission had also baptized about another 100 men, the teachers did, on seminars and campaigns they did while the students were gone. So, and that's an area that's already been worked a lot around Chamala Mission. So, but these guys are really on fire for the Word and doing a great job. This is one place that we ask for help. And our men come there, they have to be helped. Just like a guy, if he wants to go to a preacher's training school, and I don't know the names of the local preacher's training schools in this area, but I know in our area, like places like, well, even Bear Valley in Denver, or if you want to go to Brown Trail, or any of the preacher's training, or East Memphis, wherever you want to go to a preacher's training school, generally the guy has to go out and raise support so he can support his family while he's in school for 2 years. That's no different for these guys, but there's churches there where you got people that make $1 or $2 a day. They can't support the guy. And so we try to send over money. This $100 a month has been covering the staff, the support for the student, and the operation of the school. Now, I'm in the middle of some talks right now, and I think this number is going to have to go up. things keep going up price-wise, especially food over there. And so we're looking at how to probably raise this number significantly in this next few months to be able to make the school continue to operate. So, but this is one area we really need help in is student support for CBI. This school is doing a great job, but it needs more support than what we're getting right now. Other thing I have on here, a couple of things. One, we do have some men that go out and ride bicycles on Sundays. Some of the guys that work as guards at our mission during the week have been through the school. They have that job so they can support their family, but on Sunday they get on a bicycle and ride out to a village somewhere and preach and work with the congregation. I found men as far away as 25, 30 miles away. One of them had pumped his wife out there on that bicycle. Actually, when he saw me out there, he said, "Can you take my wife back?" I said, "This guy's close to 50 years old." He said, "It's getting hard for me to pump her up and down them hills." So that's dedication. Go out there and do that. And I said, "Sure, we'll tie your bicycle on top of the car and we'll take all of you back." But another guy was this last trip. I went out to in the mountains back to the east of us, this kind of southeast of us. And that guy was out there. He rode his bicycle out there and up and down them hills. And so these guys are dedicated. They do wear their bicycles out. So $150 to buy them a new bicycle. Churches, the way we run our program over there, when our men go out and work a new area and get a church established, we will ask them to rent a house there in the village from somebody or building from somebody there. And as they continue to grow, once they reach the point that they can no longer fit in that house, we'll ask them to start looking for land. And generally, the village and these small villages will actually give them property or give them some land for a very, very small price. We ask them to acquire that land. We ask them to make their bricks. We ask them to dig their footers for the foundation, build their footers, and get their bricks laid up the walls up on the building. And we do all this so they have ownership of that building. And then somebody just didn't give them that building because they'll take a lot better care if they did all that work to get it up to that far. But we do try to help them with the roof because you can see what a new roof on an average church building costs. That's a lot of money for people that make $2 a day, $3 a day to come up with $1,000 is. So they can do the work, but we try to help them financially with the roof. So we do about 4 or 5 roofs a year on average. So if you want to spend some money for a church roof, we'll put that in that account. Also, Bibles. We go through a couple, 3,000 Bibles a year on handouts. Most of them are to new Christians. And we're needing Bible money right now. So for 10 new Bibles is $75 on average. Price fluctuates some because of the currency exchange fluctuation, but it averages between 70 to 80. 75 is a pretty good average for 10 new Bibles. These are Swahili Bibles so they can read. We don't go out and hand out Bibles, just handing them out. We don't hand them out when they come out of the water. Because if people find out you're giving a new Bible to get baptized, when you get baptized, people will actually get baptized just to get a new Bible. When you're that poor, I mean, that's worth $6, $7. That's a lot of money to them. So they will, what we do, we have a baptism. Our preachers will go back, our evangelists will. A couple weeks later, I talk to the preacher and say, "Are they coming?" And they say, "Yeah, well, I want them to get this Bible." So they have Bible study out of it. So that's how our Bible program works. Our main evangelism efforts through our, and this doesn't count the hospital, the schools, and all the other things we do, is through World Bible correspondence work. We're doing lots of correspondence work. I've got a church down in California, down here in Orange. Orangeville, or down south in California. They print Swahili World Bible School tracts for us. Somebody translated all the tracts into Swahili, and they print them all. I just talked to him the other day. He's waiting on the 5 and 6 tracts right now. He was asking me about sending me more. I said, "We need them." He said, "Well, I'll try. Hopefully we get them." I said, "He won't know how quick we need them." I said, "Well, not till probably at least September, the earliest, maybe October. He said, well, if I can get them, I'll get them all to you before then. Not, I'll send you what I got. But we use lots of those. We do radio evangelism. We got one that we've been doing for now 2 years. Been fantastic outreach. We're trying to get another one started in the Bay City itself. It's supposed to be a powerful radio station. Also with the Gospel Chariot. Any of you familiar with the Gospel Chariot? There's a man named George Punk. He's South African. He lives down in South Africa. Member of the Church of Christ. He saw a need for this work. And he's built some special trucks. And the one we use is called the bush truck, because we're out in the bush. And it's one that you have to go out on dirt roads and rough places with. And it's a four-wheel drive, four-ton Mercedes-Benz truck. And it's custom built from the ground up. It's got a stage that folds out on the side. Door opens up. That's where you stand and preach off of. It's got built-in baptistry. Because once again, you heard me talking about the water problem. Sometimes you have to go for miles. I wore blisters on my feet one day trying to walk to a baptism. Somebody after I preached said they want to be baptized, and they said, you can go with us. We're just going to walk over there. I said, sure. Well, I'd made a mistake and wore my dress shoes that day. And time I got back, I had a blister on my foot. I bet it was 3 or 4 miles over there. And I wasn't used to walking up wearing them dress shoes. And it's a long way. So they have a baptistry on the truck. They have 200 stacking chairs that go inside the truck. So they put those chairs out. They got a tent canopy that attaches to the side of the truck. They set up, so they got a tent to sit under, so they're out of the hot sun. And when we do use that truck in the program, we'll go to that village a few days beforehand, start handing out Bible tracts. You know, we got all kinds of tracts that are written in Swahili, not just World Bible School, but all kinds that have been written over the years. And start handing those out, visiting people, getting some Bible studies established. And then when the truck shows up, those studies continue. And the same time every afternoon, we get out there and start preaching off that truck. And that sound system's loud enough, everybody in the village knows we're preaching off that truck. And they come, sometimes by the hundreds, to sit out there and listen to the gospel be preached. They don't actually have to come all the way after the truck to hear it. I've watched them in the past. I've got to speak off of it several times. And they will be, you know, down the road, they're standing there listening. And so it's a great tool, and I'm going to show you some results here in a little bit, what happened last year. We do Bible seminars. This is where the people have been doing correspondence course, but they never have committed to be baptized yet. We'll have a group in an area all come together for a day's full of lessons, and they get to also ask a lot of questions. It's a very good tool in bringing them to the conclusion and understanding they need to be baptized. Also, we have ladies' seminars, youth seminars. We just had those this year. We had baptisms out of both those. Last year, total, we had 720 baptisms out of our efforts at the mission. Now, that doesn't count what's going on out in the churches, because we have over 100 congregations that we've established, and they have their own baptisms. But at the mission's efforts, we had 720 baptisms in 2016. This is Frank Mwakambulu. I mentioned he's the guy that does the correspondence work. This is some of our main men. That's Joshua Mwakasima on the left. Joshua, the one that works down at the hospital for a long time, was a teacher down at the CBI. And he's also the one that's been great in making efforts to start new churches around. One beside him in the striped shirt is Joseph Honga. Joseph heads up our evangelism team. He also is the director of CBI. Middle is Boaz Kasiba, long time, been there since in the 80s. A great preacher, a great evangelist. He's also now serving as an elder at the church there on the mission. Next to him is Ezekiel Harrison. Ezekiel is also a great translator, a great teacher. He's also now got into going out and doing seminars on raising chickens to help especially our preachers and even some of the Christians be able to better support themselves and make some money for themselves where they can have a little better life. He's went and did one in Dar es Salaam and did a chicken seminar and ended up with 2 baptisms. can't resist teaching a little bit of the gospel while you're doing a chicken seminar. So, and then Peter Comitula, he works mostly now in Invea, and he's the one trying to get the radio program started in Invea. We've been to start this new program. We're doing World Bible School camps where you go into a village, set up a little tent, put up a sign, world, like you see there, World Bible School, and just talk to people down the street as they're walking by. Would they like to do correspondence courses and kind of do a speed course through them? They did this for a couple weeks here a while back. Had 22 baptisms that time with this work. The Gospel Chariot. I told you we had good results last year. We had a 5-week period between August and September. 121 baptisms. It was so exciting when that was going on last year. I was getting calls almost daily and emails. They were so excited. They had been in one village, they had 9 baptisms. The next village they went over to, they had 41. And went to the next one, and the first night there, they had like 7 more. I mean, it was just like, they called me, I said, you just wouldn't believe how it's going. So they were excited. And these, you see this guy standing there on the right, and these people lined up. These are people that said they want to be baptized. Something that we do over there, and I think maybe we should do more over here. Before you get in that water, that we teach again, making sure you understand the commitment you're making and what God is going to expect of you when you become a Christian. You know, you're going to be expected, you know, to serve God, to live the right kind of life, to go to the church, you know, all the things, and we put all the scriptures behind it so they know that they are taking on a new life. They're not getting wet. So, and then after they come out, we teach them some more. So, it's really interesting over there, and I love doing it. When we took over the work, and I say we as the elders in New York Avenue in 1998, when Jerry Herring went over there the first time, he came back and reported to Jim and I. He said, I think one of the things we really need is Christian schools. He had time to work a little bit and talk to the missionaries over there. And one of the struggles that they were really having is finding preachers, men that wanted to be preachers, they could read on a high enough level to really comprehend the Bible well and be able to study the Bible well. And so after a lot of discussion and talk and prayer, we agreed that we would start the school system. We knew this would be a long-term plan. It wouldn't be something that would happen overnight. We wouldn't see the results for a long time because it's going to take 15 years or 12 years before you get the first one graduated, and they got to go through and get mature. So, you know, it's a 20, 30-year plan. But we started the school in 99, the primary school. And these bottom pictures are some pictures at the primary school. This school quickly gained a very high reputation. We have to turn people away every year for the school. Want to come there. We have students coming from Dar es Salaam, Arusha, across the country. People bringing their kids this big and dropping them off to live with us at our dorms, because they want their kids to have a better chance in life. Now, these parents are paying school fees. These schools are self-supporting. They support themselves off the school fees they earn there. So that's part of our plan, is to make the whole mission one day be self-supporting. We're not there yet, but we're getting there. This mission runs around $1.5 million to $1.6 million a year in dollars to operate. About 60 to 65% of that is being raised on that side now. So, yeah, it is. It's a pretty major step. So, we're hoping to get it eventually. One day we're working some agriculture projects, tree projects, where these will be bringing an income to support the mission itself. This is some pictures from Herring Christian Secondary School. This was graduation last year. The bottom pictures of the graduating class down there waiting to graduate. And that top picture is some of our 7th grade primary school students. They're singing for them and doing a performance for them in the graduation. That particular picture is inside the dining hall that I built while I was there. It's a 60 by 100 building, and I built it partially for this purpose and partially for actually every day where they eat lunch. But when the government came in there, I built the longest piece of lumber you can buy in Tanzania is 12 foot long. I built trusses that spanned at 60 foot with no post or support out of 12 foot pieces of lumber. And when the government official walked in to see it the first time, he goes, "That's a miracle." He couldn't believe that could be done because all their buildings have posts everywhere. They don't ever clear span anything. And I did a lot of research and study on it, and I come up with a truss design I thought would work. And it is. So anyway, really, the school there is doing well too, and it's got a great reputation. This is a young lady that went through our primary school, is now back at our primary school as a teacher. She's a good Christian lady. We got two more good Christian, one's a man, one's a woman, this is graduated from our schools, that will be there next year teaching. So we're getting the plans coming together. We're seeing some of the fruits of the school. And eventually we hope to have a full staff and start seeing churches have elders and preachers that come through that school, and nurses and doctors down at the hospital that come through those schools. This is one place also we can use help. We're trying to help some of the families, the orphans that they're taking care of, the Christian families, and also some of our preachers that are out in these outlying villages where they have to completely depend on themselves to support themselves because those little churches generally can't give them much more, maybe a bag of rice or beans every once in a while. So we're trying to get some of their kids into our schools. For $60 a month, you can support a kid through primary school, and $90 a month for secondary, and that houses, feeds them, and educates them. I mentioned a while ago we do ship containers. This is one we just came in, this last one at the end of the year, showing it being unloaded, and I'm in the process right now trying to get another one ready. I hope to ship in around September or October this year to head back over there. And I've got a bunch more hospital beds, some more equipment for the hospital and schools both. Along with, we always send a lot of Bible material on there, the tracts and Bibles and all that kind of stuff that they need over there. This is my last slide. I'm sorry I took so long tonight, but I've been trying to give you all a lot of details that I haven't been here before. And I take it nobody's probably ever been here before, but if they have been, it's been a long time. And so I wanted to give you all more detail than I normally give, just so y'all could kind of know what's going on. Give you a little background on this picture. This was taken the first year we were there in 2007. And I had a church I was preaching at every Sunday afternoon. It's about 10 miles out north of the mission. And one Sunday morning, or evening, this little girl was walking up carrying her mom's Bible, and Cindy snapped her picture. I didn't see her do it. But when she printed it off, I saw it, and I said, "I love the picture." And so I have a copy of it hanging in my office over there in Tanzania, in Chitmala. It just always was kind of one of those things that when I was having a tough day over there, I could look at it and remind me why we were there, why we were doing the work we were doing, why we wasn't home with our grandkids and parents that were aged and needing some help. You know, but those people over there need the gospel. Christ told us to go and preach the gospel to all the world. And I know when we walk out these doors tonight, we're in the world and we need to preach the gospel out there. But just like Christ said in John 4:35, said, "Behold, I say to you, lift your eyes and look on the fields. They are white unto the harvest." And that's what I found when I went to Tanzania. And they still are. Just like that young man that went up there back home. And I didn't tell you the whole story. He went up there home. He came from a congregation. He found out after he got to our school that wasn't worshiping everything correctly. They were doing some things in error. And so he tried to teach them the things they were doing in error. And they said, "No, we don't want to change. We like what we're doing." He said, "Well, I can't be a part of that." And he kind of like Christ told his disciples, he shook the dust from his feet and he moved on. He moved over to another village and started teaching and baptized 30 people and started a new congregation. I have pictures of all that. I haven't put them on here yet. You know, it's a hard thing to do this presentation. I could do things that would take all night to show you. but it was a really good story. And you know, we need to be ready to help get the gospel out there. And that's what you guys have been doing when you helped your mama. You've been helping us do this work, and we appreciate that. I know my lesson tonight, and I guess I could ask, is there anybody got questions that you want to ask? Yes.
I noticed that you had one of the old-timer WDF lessons on that little, because I recognize it.
Right.
You use it all the time.
Right.
And can you still get your hands on those? Those are the ones that we sent abroad. We worked in Kenya and Nigeria. Now, we worked with English ones, obviously, not Swahili.
Well,
yeah,
right.
So someone's translating into Swahili, but you must have the original.
We've had some. The ones I'm sending now do not look like that.
But can you still get your hands on the text of those lessons?
I can find out. I can talk to John Reese.
Those are what everybody needs to be. I mean, they have a WBS lesson now, but it's so complicated that students are not grasping it.
Okay.
You just need the basics like you're talking about here. It's simple.
Right.
And if it isn't simple, they walk away from it.
Right. Let me talk to John Reese. John's one of the heads up WBS now, and down there, the Austin down there. I can't think of the name of the town now he's at. But I see John. I just saw him like week before last at Red River and talked to him.
Well, you had some because I saw it.
Yeah, we do. I think that was a set of English ones that John had given me to send over for them guys to review when he took that picture. When we took that picture and he was holding it up. Like some of the ones we're actually using have been translated.
Right.
But I think John probably can get them for us.
The Church of California then translated that into Swahili?
Well, actually a man that had been over there as a missionary translated it for us, and then it was very fluent in Swahili. And we sent it over there and let them check it, and then we sent it back and said, yeah, it's okay. So
now, run me through this. You're handing these out so they come back in and correct them?
Frank's one that does all the corrections and everything.
Wow. That must be a major job.
He is what his full time job basically is. He works there. He does lots and he goes back to the Bible seminars. He's an unbelievable man. He came to me about 2 or 3 years ago. He said, you know, I could do more if I had a little small motorcycle, because lots of these people are not that far away. He said, if I had a little motorcycle where I could go out to their village and talk to them face to face, I know I could do more than he has. So, 'cause I got him one and he's been doing it. I'll try to find out if the old versions are still out there. I think they are. At least, I think they still at least have them on file down there. 'Cause, yeah. So I'll check on that. Anything else? Yes. Slowly. I had a man go over in 2012, I guess it was, that had a degree. He'd been a farmer all his life. He actually had a degree from TCU in farming and ranching. And he had agreed to go there and live full time and teach farming and cattle raising to our people. And he only lasted about 6 months. Not everybody can handle the culture shock. I found that through the years. You know, some people go there, they're fine with it. I was fine with it but I kind of knew what it was. I'd been over there enough, I knew what it was like, I knew the people. But some people go over and it hits them and they just can't handle it. Things are a lot different, you know, in their culture. And you got to, maybe I didn't do a good enough job preparing them. I don't know. We're trying to do better at that now, preparing missionaries that have not been there. He had been some places in the past. The reason I didn't worry about him, he'd been some other places. And I thought he'd be okay, but he didn't last. So right now, I do not have anybody. We've got some small projects going. We've got a tree project. We've got about 15,000 trees planted. We've got a small deal going up on the mountain where we grew some beans. We got some avocados planted, and we just got the harvest on the beans. They wasn't huge, but it was enough to pay for the deal and make a little money out of. We're raising some chickens. If you've been reading the articles, Richard and Carol are doing chickens and teaching them how to raise chickens. But we need to be doing something on a much larger scale. We got the land to do it. I just need somebody to go there and really teach them agriculture. Because what they're used to doing in their life, but because of their economy, is growing a little plot here and a little plot there. They're not used to the idea of doing acreage, you know, acres and acres, which the operation is much different. And I'm really looking for, if any of y'all know a farmer that I could do some mission work for 3 or 4 years, I sure could like to talk to you. Because I need one real bad. Because that's something we're in dire need of. Because I think that's the next step to make the mission actually totally self-sustaining. And so I know the preacher school and the primary and secondary school would benefit greatly. We were able to raise all our food for those operations, and at the same time teach some of these men how to do that to support themselves. So that's one of the projects we really want to do. So, but I think we lack a little bit being there on where we need to be, in my opinion, on that. Anything else? If there's not anything else, I'll go ahead and close out. Me and Cindy will stand around here and talk to you as long as you want to talk tonight, answer questions. We've got some newsletters out there you can pick up. We've got a sheet. If you'd like to get I know you get it here at the church building every month, but if you want it sent directly to your house, or if you'd like to get... All right. Okay. If you'd like to get the newsletter by mail or email, either way, snail mail or email, just all you have to do is sign that list up out there and put down either your email address or your physical address, and you'll start getting it every month. So don't forget to do that. Well, I'm going to close out tonight.